It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Earlier this month, Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf signed into law a new formula for distributing state education money. A state formula is used to decide how the pie of money should be divided. And at the same time, it's a way for the state to recognize the districts that need the most help and attempt to level the playing field for those that face more challenges when it comes to generating local revenue. Joining us to look at how the new education funding formula works and the chances that it will accomplish what it was designed to do are Kevin McCory, Keystone Crossroads education reporter. He joins us by phone from Philadelphia. Kevin McCory, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Great to be here, Paul. Thank you.
Also with us by phone is Jay Himes. He is executive director of the Pennsylvania Association of School Business Officials. Jay Himes, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Paul. Glad to be here.
And we can take your email questions today at ESSPGH@WESA.FM. That's ESSPGH@WESA.FM and on Twitter at ESSPGH. Kevin McCory, let's look at the history here. What kinds of inequities have traditionally existed with public schools in Pennsylvania?
Well, if you just start with this fact, since 1991, for the most part, we haven't been counting actual student enrollment when the state's been handing out its biggest pot of education cash, the basic education subsidy. So there was a compromise back in 1991 that we would implement what's known as hold harmless, which means a school district will never receive less money than it did the year before, even if it loses enrollment. And this was, you know, an idea so that it would protect districts from, you know, if they lost 25 kids, if you're a small rural district, if you would lose the funding that those 25 kids represent, it could, you know, devastate your district in a way that, you know, wasn't in parity. But over time, I think that it was unanticipated just how drastic some of these enrollment changes would be. So here we are 25 years later. And if you look at it, if you look at how the state divides education money per pupil, the districts that get the most money per pupil are the districts that have, in general, lost the most enrollment. So there's kind of a lack of logic built into that system. And that's what the formula is attempting to correct for. And like you mentioned at the top of the show, the formula is newly signed into law. It was used in this past year for $152 million, how to divide that. But the pot is $5.6 billion, right? So it's a drop in the bucket compared to what's in the pot overall. So all that inequity over this past 25 years that I was just referring to is baked into the cake and will continue to be, right, until the majority of the funding is quote-unquote new money, which could take a long time, decades maybe.
Right. And there is some effect that what is being decided as we speak in Harrisburg will impact certainly this formula going forward. But you wrote a marvelous piece entitled Everything You Want to Know About the New Funding Formula, But We're Afraid to Ask. And I'm only afraid to ask because it would take it would take the better part of the remainder of the show and then some to cover everything that you cover in this extensive piece, which we'll certainly point people to on our website. But in a nutshell, Kevin, how does this new funding formula work, and how were the tenets of the new formula arrived at?
Okay, so there was a funding commission that was pushed for under former Governor Tom Corbett and the legislature. And once that commission was formed, it was both it was a bipartisan commission. It had people from the governor's administration. And then when Wolf came in, his people were put on the commission and they traveled the state and they took testimony and tried to understand the challenges all across the state. And at the end, they put together this formula that takes into account certain demographics. So there's three demographics in the matrix for poverty. So, you know, there's a lot of weight in there. If you have a lot of kids in poverty, deep poverty, and then concentrated poverty, there's a weight in there for English language learners. So that's acknowledging, and this is revolutionary, right, for the state to acknowledge that, yes, it costs more money and there are added challenges and burdens when districts have a lot of kids and need to serve a lot of kids who are in poverty and who are English language learners. There's a weight in there for charter school students, which is just the recognition that there's stranded costs when districts have a lot of charter students. It's not a one-to-one, you know, money follows the child situation. There's the legacy costs and all the costs of running a district and a duplication of the service, in a sense. there's, the formula looks at the local tax capacity of a district. So what's your median household income? How much do you already pay in local property taxes? How much more could you pay? Are you paying above the state median? You take all that into account, and also taking into account sparsity. So recognizing that a big rural district that has to bus its kids all over the place, that's an added burden for that district. So that it takes all those things into account, and it spits out this formula, and it says, okay, with all these things in mind, this is where we think the money should be divided.
Jay Himes with the Pennsylvania Association of School Business Officials. Has there been a clamor for a student-weighted formula, and where has that clamor been?
Well, I think the answer to your question is yes. I think there has been a large degree of dissatisfaction with this year-to-year process in which some districts get singled out in some cases because of who their legislator is, and get changing factors year to year. So I think there was growing districts concerned that no longer were students at the center of state funding. And I think there were other districts who were concerned that this year-to-year process was so erratic in how it distributed money to districts that most people would say we need a formula that would have some degree of predictability, obviously some degree of adequacy in its funding levels, and some degree of equity in terms of recognizing these special factors that Kevin outlined, particularly poverty and English language learner students, some degree of equity to recognize the additional cost. So I think everybody said we need a formula. We need those factors considered, and particularly growing school districts who thought they were getting the short end of the stick while their student populations were growing.
And most advocates call this a major step forward, as Pennsylvania has been one of only three states in the nation lacking a student-weighted formula. Obviously, Jay Himes, you think that it is.
Absolutely. I think the commission did wonderful work. I wasn't sure they'd ever get to the end result because everybody wants to consider every conceivable factor in their particular district to go into the formula. It is the distribution of this big pot that Kevin mentioned, almost $5.8 billion now, somewhat of a feeding frenzy. Everybody wants the most they can get, and sometimes it turns into sort of intramural warfare where districts look at what other districts get and make their evaluations about their perception of fairness and how that's distributed. But I think I've likened this to a big pot of rich vegetable soup. There's a lot of things in it, as Kevin talked about. Not as many to make it inexplicable or so complex, but there's a lot of vegetables coming out of the garden that went into the soup. And I think a lot of the factors are very reasonable. We think the commission did also great work by tossing out some of the indicators and factors that had been used to distribute BEF for past 20 or 30 years. We thought they were no longer valid. That they did okay in some cases and not very good in other cases. So the commission wasn't afraid to use some of those new indicators like median household income that Kevin mentioned, and wasn't afraid to address some of the tax capacity, which is important. If you don't have a tax base, you can't raise money locally, and also the tax effort. So I think they did great work. I think we've seen the baptism of the formula. Again, I don't think everybody's going to like it. Everybody's going to find something wrong with it. But it may be the best formula that everybody may dislike a little bit equally. And maybe that's as best as the commission could come up with in terms of meeting the perceived needs of 500 school districts with $5.8 billion.
We have a Twitter question from Regis who asks, how do special education students affect this formula?
They're not in there and separate. That's special education funding is its own separate line item, and there is a large debate in that sphere too on exactly how that should be handled and how that should be done. And you know, some attempt. There was a special education commission a few years back that did address some of those concerns, and that kind of continues to be a debate, especially as it regards how charter schools receive special education money. But this formula in and of itself doesn't recognize special education at all.
I want to go back.
Let me add a footnote.
Go ahead, Jay.
Let me add a footnote to Kevin's comments. I think that was an excellent first step. Was a commission, much like there was a BEF commission, there was a special education funding commission. They did a lot of good work. They weren't afraid to get out of the box in terms of new formula factors. I think it set a good precedent for moving forward with much bigger and much more intense discussions around the basic education funding. So special ed's in its own new formula now in year three, and I think that was a significant step forward in allowing some positive aspect of the General Assembly's mission to recreate a basic education funding formula.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're talking about the new education formula, funding formula in the state of Pennsylvania, signed into law by Governor Wolf earlier this month. With us are Kevin McCrory, Keystone Crossroads education reporter, and Jay Himes, executive director of the Pennsylvania Association of School Business Officials. Kevin, I want to go back to something you said earlier about how it could conceivably end up taking decades before we fully feel the effects of this new funding formula and are able to judge whether it is working. And I realize that it may be hard to predict, but in your view, and also in yours, Jay, will this bring equity? And which districts are really going to benefit from this?
So I guess I would say it's important to, off the top, remember what this commission and this funding formula does not ask. It does not ask what's adequate to really ensure that all the students in the Commonwealth are being served at a level that they can meet the state's expectations. It's not asking them. It's just asking whatever money we have, how do we divide it most fairly? And when you take it from there, yes, the formula helps you see and helps you acknowledge that over time there have been certain districts that have been severely disadvantaged. And over time, as more money goes through the formula, it will favor those districts. So those districts are Reading. Those districts are Erie, Philadelphia, Lancaster, Wilkes-Barre, Panther Valley, smaller rural districts also throughout the state. And it also recognizes that there's districts where, you know, they've been getting maybe more money per pupil than you'd expect based on, like I had said before, the fact that they have enrollment declining. And this has had an effect on local property taxes as well. So if you were a growing district in the east, it turned out you weren't getting that requisite money from the state to, reflect the fact that you have more kids, so you have to turn to your local taxpayers and you have to raise property taxes more. Conversely, if you're a shrinking district in the west, you didn't have to go to your constituents and ask for tax increases as much. And over 25 years, there's an inequity built in there. So over time, those things should subside. But, you know, like I said, when there's $5.6 or $7 billion in the pot in general, and right now we're talking about there's $152 million through the formula. This year, it seems like the governor and the legislature are going to come somewhere around $200 million, maybe $250 million. Over time, that number will grow, and more of the total pot will be driven through the formula. But like I said, yes, of course, that can take decades. If you're only putting $200 million in per year, it's going to take a long time. That's partly why advocates have been pushing for $400 million a year through the formula. But that politically hasn't, I guess there hasn't been the appetite for that because that probably is only possible with some sort of tax increase.
And to your point, Kevin, Jay, the Education Law Center says while this formula is a major step forward for equitable education funding, it will only be effective if the General Assembly appropriates sufficient dollars to fund our schools. And as I mentioned, this is being decided in Harrisburg as we speak. The budget is due today. What figure do you think works here? How much money needs to be approved to make the funding formula work?
Well, clearly I would agree with the fact that a formula with no funding hasn't achieved what the outcome needs to be. It needs to be a two-step process. We have the formula. Now we need to increase the funding. Obviously, we would like to see as much as possible. We will get faster and quicker to the rebalancing that will take place with this new formula. So, for instance, right now, that basic education funding distribution to school districts across the state ranges from as low as $500 in some school districts to more than $8,000 in other school districts. We've created this huge range, and certainly districts at the low end want to see themselves get more, and at the same time, very poor districts with high poverty students and our tax base challenged don't want to see their education resources go backwards. So I think to answer your question specifically, if we maintain a 3 or 4% increase over a decade, we will, by the end of that decade, have rebalanced this to certainly make more sense. The Basic Education Funding Commission, by the way, did not envision this to be the formula end-all forever and ever. The commission itself said we should get together every 5 years and review the effects. But I think over 10 years with an adequate level of funding, $200-300 million as a baseline per year, we would certainly get to that rebalancing and eliminate that spread of $500 to $8,000 per student.
In your view, does this funding formula make funding more stable and less susceptible to sudden swings in enrollment?
Yes, I would certainly say that it does because it takes a 3-year average to start with. So averaging the student population over that time period helps to smooth this out. And there are quite a bit of other factors that go in that will also keep this rather consistent and not necessarily swings up or down. So I don't think you'll see erratic funding. I think you'll see rather consistent funding. And especially after the first couple years, when this gets to be much more balanced in its approach, I think it'll be much more easy for school districts to understand what the effects of what's going on in districts will result in terms of basic education funding.
And Jay,
just to answer that question
ahead,
too, Paul,
yeah.
Right now, say the legislature and the governor agree on a $200 million boost to basic education funding. If you're a school district, you know exactly how much you're going to get. You know exactly why. In the past, that was all up in the air, and there was such a shroud of kind of political mystery over the whole thing that it was very frustrating and it was hard to plan. So that's a major step forward, and I think districts everywhere are happy with the fact that there's much more. It's not complete transparency in the process now.
And Jay, we've got about 30 seconds left in this segment, but what more, in your view, needs to be done?
Well, I think the formula needs to be able to work. It's not going to be universally embraced. People are going to say, oh my gosh, why is this district getting more than me? Or why am I not getting this much? And how did this factor come into play? So it'll be that transformation period where people get adjusted to the complexities of the formula, but understand, as Kevin says, in the end, it's not only the dollars, but it's why. So I think it's sort of a baptism for the first couple of years. And then after that, I think people will learn to recognize how the formula will work and what factors will be involved.
Jay Himes is Executive Director of the Pennsylvania Association of School Business Officials. Also joining us, Kevin McCory, Keystone Crossroads education reporter. Gentlemen, great thanks.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you, Paul.
Coming up, we'll talk with a man who has been involved in Pittsburgh's fight against the HIV/AIDS epidemic for a quarter century. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. Mm-hmm.